Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Power Up and Game Podcast. I am your host, Michael Mosley, and I am joined today, of course, with Riley. Riley, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Michael? It's been a few weeks since we've recorded together.
It's been a little while, but I'm doing all right. Speaking of which, you all probably noticed that there wasn't a new episode week prior, and we're sorry about missing last week, and some real life stuff came up, and Taylor couldn't record, and some things came by and I couldn't record, so we both ran into little issues that kept pushing back our time to record, and it just didn't work out. So with that out of the way, here's what is on the docket for today's episode. Xbox Game Pass for May has been announced. We'll go over those and some rumors about what other titles could be dropping on the service soon. We'll also talk about the PlayStation Plus games for May ahead of Sony's tiered PlayStation Plus revamp. Square Enix has sold off several of their IPs to Embracer Group. We'll share our thoughts on that and our quote-unquote expert predictions on what the future looks like for those IPs. This episode is going out on May 9th, but we're recording on May the 4th, which has become the day where Star Wars fans celebrate their franchise. So in our main topic, we'll be doing just that by sharing our favorite Star Wars games of all time, which there are a lot of Star Wars games to choose from. But let's get started with our stories of the week. Xbox Game Pass adds Sniper Elite 5, Trek to Yumi, and more. Game Pass is adding some notable games to its service soon. Here's the list of what subscribers can expect from the service. Citizen Sleeper is coming out on cloud, the console, and PC Game Pass on May 5th. Trek to Yumi, as I mentioned before, is also coming to those very same services on May 5th. Danganronpa 2 Goodbye Despair Anniversary Edition hits the cloud, console, and PC service on May 10th. I hope I said that name right. That was always one of those franchises I can never completely say.
You said it pretty right. Wow, it's harder to say than I thought it was. Danganronpa, I think. Yeah,
that was kind of that's the kind of game that you know comes from Japan, and you're like, boy, if I say this wrong, it probably means something completely different.
Yeah, that's true. I never thought about that.
And yet another name that I'm going to mess up. Euden Chronicle Rising hits cloud, console, and PC on May 10th. I don't know, Riley, you want to take a shot at that name?
I think you did it pretty well. I would maybe Euden. Yeah.
Okay, well, we can both be messed up now. Also, coming to the service is This War of Mine Final Cut on cloud, console, and PC on May 10th. Man, I swear This War of Mine has been released like 10 times. I see. Also, thanks to EA Play, NHL 22 is coming to console on May 12th. There are a few notable games leaving the service as well, including Enter the Gungeon on May 15th, which I highly recommend people playing. Enter the Gungeon is pretty fun. I really enjoyed it. Remnant from the Ashes also leaves on May 15th. And probably the biggest questionable one that's leaving the services is Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, the Definitive Edition on May 10th. Based on how much people dislike the recent GTA remasters, I don't think many are going to be too upset about Game Pass losing the San Andreas remaster. As first reported by XGP and later VGC, a listing on the Microsoft Store seems to indicate that Battlefield 2042, this podcast's favorite game of all time, and yes, we are being very sarcastic about that, may be also heading to Game Pass sooner rather than later. Riley, any thoughts on the games coming to Game Pass, the games leaving Game Pass, or the possibility of Battlefield 2042 heading to the services?
I will say this batch is kind of weak, I would say, with the exception of Trek to Yomi, which I really, really want to play. The only other one that has me interested actually is Euden Chronicle. I don't know anything about the game, but the name sounds cool. So, like, you know, might want to check that out. But I just, you know, I don't have time to play many new games these days. In other words, like, I have so much to choose from that even a game that I want to play, like Trek to Yomi, is like way down on the list, unfortunately. I might check it out though, but as you'll hear in my, like, what have we been playing segment later in the episode, I've just been like big gaming ADHD, just like just bouncing from one thing to the next. And so, yeah, I don't know. But as far as Battlefield 2042 goes, I don't know. Like, I don't really have any thoughts anymore about Battlefield 2042, honestly. Like, I don't think it's going to do anything for the game. You know, the damage has kind of already been done. I don't think putting it on Game Pass is going to potentially do anything to heighten its popularity. But, yeah, I think... those are kind of my thoughts on all these. Are there any games in this batch that that you're looking forward to, Michael?
Like you, Trek to Yomi is the game that I've been like really interested in seeing more of and actually playing. But really what's gotten me currently is Citizen Sleeper. It looks very interesting. It looks like a game that you play on PC. It doesn't look like a console game to me, but only because of the way everything is set up for it. It looks like it works better with the... mouse rather than controller. But yeah, Citizen Sleeper definitely has my interest, and I kind of agree with you when it comes to Battlefield 2042. I think it's a good idea for it to come to Game Pass, and I will be honest, I'm partially saying that because I now have an Xbox Series X, and I feel that if you have the PS5 or the Series X or a good gaming PC, like, that's easily the best place to play this game. And that's putting it very lightly, because really this Battlefield 2042 is not very good. I haven't played it in months. I will be honest with you. I don't own the game. I rented the game. And within like the first couple of weeks, I played it and sent it back. I've seen a lot of the progress that developers have made on the game. I've been keeping up with it because, honestly, I do think Battlefield 2042 can get better if they make the right moves. I said this back when Battlefield 2042 had its beta out, that you wait a year before you play a Battlefield game because it's always going to be broken and the servers aren't going to work for like the first few months. Like, it's been that way for like almost every Battlefield game since what, Bad Company 2, like after they started doing more modern stuff, like the bigger multiplayer, like in Battlefield 4, or I think it was Battlefield 4, I forget which one. It's all been a little janky. The online services never really worked for like the first 2, 3, 4, 5 months. Like, it takes DICE a while to get Battlefield into an actual playable state, which is why I didn't trick myself into getting the game at launch. So having wait that long, now I feel that Game Pass is the best place to play Battlefield 2042. And while it will ignite more players, because players like me who waited out would try it on Game Pass, since technically I have nothing to lose, I think that it will help with more feedback from the developers. And really, because I had been going back to playing Battlefield 4. And I think that was like the last really good Battlefield game, Battlefield 4. And even then, Battlefield 4 took months before it was like a good game from its initial launch. So yeah, I think Battlefield 2042 will do well on Game Pass. But yeah, I do kind of agree with you that it's kind of late for that last Hail Mary, because I don't think DICE is going to be able to recover a whole lot with Battlefield 2042, especially since we already know the next iteration, the next Battlefield is already in development and is already being designed and developed, and that we'll probably see it in the next 2 years before we hear an official announcement, probably. So 2042 has maybe another year and a half to fix itself and become the Battlefield game that recovered, because that's the story with all Battlefield games. They all just they start off horrible and eventually they get good.
Yeah.
As for the games coming to Game Pass, I agree with you. There's nothing on this list for May that actually makes me go, wow, what a good month.
Yeah. I just wanted to get back to Battlefield 2042. And something that you touched on is, like, you think that they're going to be able to bring it to kind of salvage some of what they lost. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on it, maybe, because I think any game can be updated, right? And any game could eventually become something great. Like, look at No Man's Sky. That's the example I always give. However, I think with Battlefield 2042, some of the gameplay elements and some of the things that are baked into the core experience are things that made people very mad. And also, like, pissed off long time fans of the series, also simultaneously pissed off people like me that were just coming back from, like, not playing since Battlefield 3 and 4, really. And, like, the biggest problem I have with that game, personally, is the 128-person Battlefield mode, because it just makes it not fun. There's just something about it, and maybe it's just the way that the levels are designed, but it's something like, there's too many people on the map, and, like, you're just getting killed way too often. It's not as fun, I think. And I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts and see what you think about that.
Yeah, no, I completely understand where you're coming from with that. Like, there is such thing as too much going on. There can be too much chaos, which I understand why the developers went with that, because back in the day, it was always console had 32 players, PC had 64. Like, that was always the thing. Like, bigger was better. You played on PC, you got the bigger battles, and it always worked. Now the consoles has 64 players, and on current gen consoles on PS5 and Series X, you get that 128 now. You get that double that consoles usually lag behind with PC. So I understand where the devs were coming from, but I also get what you're saying, because there are times where things do get too chaotic. You want to take out a tank, but as soon as you get closer, there's two helicopters on you, or there's a squad that's like respawning near the tank or whatever, and you can kill one or two of them, but then you got another squad that pops up there, and it can become a bit much. And I think the one way the devs can fix that is if there was better cover system in the game.
Yeah, everything's an open environment.
yeah, and I get where they were going with that too. It's, hey, it's war, not everything is always clustered, like you will have open field battles, which I get that. That is true. But for something that in the lore makes it sound like this war has been going on for a long time, it's oddly clean for a war. Like, the cities look a little clean. Like, even for something like, global warming has ruined the atmosphere and is causing storms. Like, really? Because this Battlefield looks like it rained a little bit, but, like, I've seen cities get more destroyed because of a football team winning a championship or something. Like, everything is way too clean for it to look like a battlefield. And, like, even Call of Duty has a better cover system than Battlefield, which is really weird to say, because, you know, Call of Duty is all about run gun. And it seems Battlefield wanted to do something similar to that, but it doesn't work. And so I think that's the biggest problem. It's like, having a map that wide, one, makes it a sniper paradise. Two, makes it a vehicle paradise, which even the devs, I believe, they even said that the game was going to be more vehicle dominant than in the previous games. Which, if you're going to do that, give me a chance to fight back. Like, I went back and played Battlefield 4, and guess what? The game gave me ammunition to fight against tanks and aircrafts. And even though I did see that game was really broken because people are just respawning the heck out of flares, but the point is that the game actually gave me a chance to fight back, where in 2042 you're in an open field and you're afraid of getting sniped, but you have to keep your weapon locked. Pretty much every weapon they have in this game, you have to keep a lock on in order to fire at a helicopter. And the problem is, it takes so long for anything to lock on that you're getting sniped or steamrolled by other players in this open field because you have nowhere to take cover. And I think that might be the biggest problem with it. And have you seen the update the devs give the devs gave for the maps?
I haven't, no. I haven't really paid much attention to that game since it came out, honestly.
Okay, I mean, I don't blame you. Like I said, I was watching it because like I was waiting for it to get better so I can play the 128 player matches on my PS5. But yeah, they've changed the maps, and they made one of the maps I actually enjoyed is the one with the science facility in it. And where there's like a wall blocking half of the map that like has a little chokehold in it, which was great fun because, you know, it was a strategic way of keeping players in or out. But they actually took away the building and pushed the players out further into the open and made the map a little smaller rather than just putting it to where the building, which was the most fun to play in, oddly enough, had a better part in the map or a better part in the game. And they're making some questionable decisions that I really don't like. They want to make the map smaller, so I think they might be getting rid of the 128 pretty soon, or at least limiting it. So they're making a couple of the maps smaller in size, well, in scope, I should say, because it's the same map. But they moved the out of boundaries closer, and I don't really like it because they took the fun part of that one map, and I can't remember the name of the map, and they got rid of it, and they're pushing you out in the open even more, so you're spawning out in the open rather than spawning in a safe place like the building, and it's very questionable. So yeah, they're making some weird decisions with it, and to be honest, Riley, I don't think you're going to enjoy coming back, even if they do have just 64 players, because when you see how they treated the maps to make it just as open but smaller, I don't think it's going to solve your issue with spawn kills.
Those two issues in conjunction are just really baffling design choice. And to be fair, just to go back to the 128-player mode, I put it the way of like, it's kind of a be careful of what you wish for scenario, because I remember throughout their whole marketing campaign being really excited for that. And then it's like when you get into it, it's like, this isn't actually fun, you know? So I do definitely understand what the devs were going for. I mean, that's been a Battlefield staple, like you said, of the new generations being double what the old generation can have. But yeah, I think they kind of found that they hit a wall after 64 players. So, yeah, definitely some baffling design choices.
Yeah, especially since they took out so many weapons so they can have their live service.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, you can really tell that this game is this podcast's favorite, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. Almost as much as 343 Industries is my favorite devs of all time. Oh, they actually released season 2 of Halo Infinite. Have you seen that one?
I haven't. I haven't played any Halo Infinite. And, you know, I have Game Pass now, so I technically could. But I've never been really a huge Halo person, and I don't know why I should get involved now.
To be honest, I love Halo. I'm sure I've talked about it in this podcast plenty of times as I dumped on 343 and my love for Halo. But you're not missing anything, Riley. Honestly, even though you have Game Pass, I wouldn't tell you that, hey, this is worth your hard drive space or whatever.
Yeah. Or time.
Or your time. Definitely not your time. So each season, and I will give 343 credit for this, each season is 6 months long rather than being 2 or 3 months. So you have...
That's good.
Yeah, so even though like people like us who don't have a whole lot of time to play online games... it gives you time to do the battle pass and all that. It's just too bad they ruined it by making it all tied down to those stupid challenges. And I've heard people say this, it's gotten harder to do things with your friends. They somehow messed up the whole friends element of Halo Infinite multiplayer, which is kind of weird. It's only two maps. They're doing two maps per season. And they're still missing a bunch of modes from the original Halo trilogy, and even like stuff that people really want, like Firefight, which is kind of like, which is Halo's Horde mode. Sure. Even that's missing. It's like, wow, that's yeah, didn't you guys delay this game by a whole year and it's still half baked? That's cool. But I will give 343 credit for at least making the seasons long so people actually have time to play it on their own time rather than feeling like, oh, I gotta rush to finish this challenge or I have to rush to fill up this battle pass. But hey, that's a definitely bonus thing for everybody. May is going to be a busy month for a lot of us, especially when it comes to subscription services such as PlayStation Plus and Xbox Game Pass. And speaking of which, moving on to PlayStation, the PlayStation Plus games for May 2022 are available now. And you get FIFA 22 on PS5 and PS4. Tribes of Midgard on PS4 and PS5. Curse of the Dead Gods for PS4. These games are available to download for PlayStation Plus subscribers until June 6th. It's also important to note that this is the final PlayStation Plus lineup before Sony officially revamps the PlayStation Plus service into the new tiered system. Whoo, boy. So, Riley, are you excited for any of these games?
No. I haven't heard of these two. Obviously, I've heard of FIFA. I'm just not interested in FIFA, really. But I don't know. I'm reading the description of Curse of the Dead Gods, and that seems pretty cool. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll check it out at some point. I probably won't, though, just to be completely honest. But that's the one that looks most interesting out of these other two, I think.
Yeah.
To me, anyway. How about you?
I am actually going to skip this month of free games that are given to me during the service. One, I don't care about FIFA. I don't even care about Madden. As much as I do enjoy football, I don't even care about Madden or NBA 2K or really any of the sports games. Yeah, I don't really get it. I mean, it's kind of cool that PlayStation Plus is getting something as new, and I am doing finger quotes, as FIFA 22. You know, that's something that you, I think is on Game Passes already, but that's because of EA Play. But the point that it is coming to PlayStation Plus, I think is pretty cool. But what I don't know is Curse of the Dead Gods. I've actually never heard of that game. I know of Tribes of Midgard, and honestly, I was never interested in that. But Curse of the Dead Gods, I'm tired of roguelikes. I know it's kind of like a thing that a lot of indie devs love, but honestly, I'm getting real tired of roguelikes. And it really seems like those are the main ones that get pushed out in these free services. They love pushing out roguelikes for some reason.
Yeah, that's fair. I like roguelikes, but I can definitely understand the fatigue. Totally.
Yeah, and it's not that I dislike roguelikes. I'm just tired of them because I actually recommended Death's Door to you about a month ago or so.
Yeah, and
that's a roguelike, and I really enjoyed that game. So it's not that I hate them. I'm just kind of tired. And even if it's free, I'm not just going to download it because roguelites, they're meant to be time consuming, which I think is why a lot of people do like them, because you do feel like you're getting better. You don't have to worry about a new game plus mode or whatever. You do actually kind of like feel like you're getting stronger rather than the game saying, wowee, look at you. Here's your reward. Here's a weapon. You're getting better. Like, am I though? So I get roguelites.
Sure.
Yeah. So I get roguelites, but I'm kind of tired of them. Yeah, you know, I just thought of something. Roguelites were the, was it Soulsborne kind of thing of the gaming industry. Like, so many people do roguelikes that it pretty much took on a life of its own.
Oh, definitely. And I would even argue that Souls-like games have elements of roguelikes to them. right? Because you're constantly dying and you're constantly going back and getting stronger. I think it's like an RPG. Like, most of those games are like RPGs mixed with roguelikes. But all different games use all different types of design principles. So,
yeah, they really do. Which is why I thought I was going to get into Bloodborne. Because it's a roguelike. But I know it's like Soulsborne. Like, well, I can't say Soulsborne because Soulsborne is whatever. But
yeah, that is kind of an outdated term.
it really is. But it was roguelike. And again, I do enjoy roguelikes. So I thought I was going to be into Bloodborne. But I was like, good God, I cannot get into this game.
Yeah. But and like, it's not like a traditional roguelike, but if you think about it, like, most Souls-like games have elements of roguelikes. It's just like they're kind of hidden from you. Whereas like roguelikes make it very, I don't know, they're designed in a different way, but I think they take principles from each other.
Yeah, the roguelike is definitely something that is in your face about it, you know, Bloodborne.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Souls games and all that. Their thing is, you know, it's going to be tough, but you can get through it. But with roguelike, it's, you're supposed to get your butt kicked. Kind of like when you start off in a JRPG and they put you in front of the boss when you're like level 3.
Yeah. Like in Elden Ring. Or I don't think they do that in Bloodborne, but they do it in Demon's Souls. They put you in front of a big boss and you're supposed to die.
Yeah, which is always a great way to introduce the roguelike mechanics and those things.
Totally.
But also, talking about dying off, Square Enix sells off several of their IPs and studios to Embracer Group. Embracer Group has acquired the likes of Eidos Montreal, Square Enix Montreal, and Crystal Dynamics. Embracer Group also acquired several of Square Enix's popular IPs, including Tomb Raider, Thief, Deus Ex, and more than 50 back catalog games. The deal was worth $300 million. Honestly, the deal was worth way more than that, but I guess Square really just had to get rid of those things. So those franchises and the studios are now under the Embracer Group umbrella. However, at the time of this recording, we still don't know where this leaves the Marvel game Square Enix had recently worked on. Both Crystal Dynamics, who developed Marvel's Avengers, and Eidos Montreal, who developed Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, were included in this deal. But where does that leave those games and their potential future? Overall, the story is still developing, and we'll probably get more clarifications about it soon. Based on our luck, more will be revealed between us recording and reposting this episode. Riley, what do you make of this deal? What do you think the future looks like for these studios and the games Embracer now owns? We know that Crystal Dynamics is working on the next Tomb Raider, but a lot of things still seem to be up in the air right now.
Yeah, I don't like it, right? And I feel bad for the developers because, you know, going under new management always sucks. I'm sure some people are going to lose their jobs. Hopefully not, but I'm sure that's going to happen. The interesting thing that stands out to me, though, is like the big hitters here, like Tomb Raider, Thief, Deus Ex, those have all been like pretty quiet within the past couple of years. I know Deus Ex had a few games come out, I don't know, within the past like 10 years, right? That series was going, but I think the last Deus Ex game came out in 2017 2018. Could have been sooner than that. Honestly, I don't pay much close attention to that franchise, but, you know, Tomb Raider, I don't know, hasn't had a game for a number of years. Thief, the last Thief game that came out was, I think it was 2014, that remake of Thief, which I actually played and from memory enjoyed, although nobody talks about that game and I think not a lot of people liked it, which is fair. Yeah, I don't know. Anytime the question that's forming in my mind is why did they do this, right? Is Square Enix in a bad financial position? And if so, it kind of ties into these rumors that we've been talking about going back several months now of like is Sony or Microsoft going to pick up Square Enix? I think, you know, several months ago, the story was, I believe it was when Microsoft acquired, oh God, I'm blanking, Activision Blizzard. The question was, okay, well, how can Sony hit back? And a lot of people were saying Square Enix, right? Maybe they could buy Square Enix, to which a lot of people said, no, that'll never happen. But, you know, you have to ask, like you said, all these franchises are worth, you know, probably more than $300 million, but they sold it at what seems to be kind of a cheap deal. So are they in need of cash? Are they doing okay financially? You know, but then the other question is, now that these games are gone, is anybody even going to care enough to pick them up? Right. I mean, you'd still get Final Fantasy, which is a huge juggernaut in its own, and you'd get other smaller things probably, like, what's the game? Life is Strange. Life is Strange. Thank you.
Stranger Things. You and things say Stranger like that. Things?
I did say Stranger Things. I didn't mean to say that. Yeah.
Netflix wants a word with you.
Please don't sue me. But yeah, I also hope that the next Tomb Raider game doesn't get canceled as a part of this. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think about this?
So a few things to answer your curiosity about why Square is doing this. I've been calling this for a little while now. For the past few years, Square Enix has been putting blame for a lot of their finances. When it comes to their quarterly reports, they blame their Western studios every year for the past few years. Every game that's come out, quote unquote, didn't meet our expectations. And I think this is just Square Enix's way of devaluing those studios for some odd reason. And I guess making them more lucrative for other studios to come in and take them out. So it's either, and you say it's a bad thing, but I think this is actually a good thing that Square sold them off. I agree. It will suck because, yeah, people will lose their jobs. But I honestly think that if those studios stayed under Square Enix umbrella for another 5-10 years, they would have gotten shut down. And Square isn't known for just shutting things down. They merge studios mostly, you know, and they quietly get rid of things. But with Embracer Group, we now know where they are and that they're under this conglomerate, because let's face it, Embracer Group is, they put Tencent to shame with what they own when it comes to this industry. Yeah. The Embracer Group owns more than enough. So anytime somebody says that Microsoft or Sony is gaining a monopoly on the gaming world with the Xbox and PlayStation sides, you're completely incorrect. The only way those two studios would be in danger of being a monopoly is if one of them bought the Embracer Group. That is the only way that we're going to be able to yell out monopoly, because I don't have a chart right now, but if you look at what the Embracer Group owns and what they've acquired in like the past 2-3 years alone, compared to what Microsoft and Sony has been doing, it's what Sony and Microsoft are doing. It's not even a drop in the bucket. It's ridiculous what the Embracer Group has been gobbling up for the past 5-10 years. And nobody has said anything, because guess what? Nobody knows anything about the Embracer Group. We just know these studios as individuals, but we know Xbox and PlayStation, so we know Sony and Microsoft. But yeah, I think it was just Sony's way of being able to get rid of these developers without it looking bad on their end. Like, oh no, we're shutting down studios that people actually like and leaving these IPs dormant. Instead, it's, hey, we sold them off. All these acquisitions have been happening. Yes, it's a big story, but we're moving on. We're no longer worried about our Western studios. We're going back to being a Eastern studio. We're a Japanese studio. We're going to have more games coming out from our Japanese studios. And for a lot of people, that's probably a great thing for them. It's like, oh, cool. I get more Final Fantasy. I get more Is Dragon Quest Square Enix?
It is, yeah.
Okay, and I get more Dragon Quest. So I think it's a double-edged sword, yes, but I think it works in the favor of everybody, especially the studios that were under the boot of Square Enix. Square Enix trying to move to a games as service deal with Marvel Avengers was a bad move, and it made their devs look super bad. Despite the point that I don't even think that studio wanted to do a games as service. I think they wanted to do just like a straight up action game, but you know, Square Enix was dipping their toes in the games as service racket. And to answer your why did he do this, I hate to tell you this, Riley, but we do know for a fact that Square Enix sold off the studios for the $300 million, and they're going to put that money to blockchain and NFT technologies.
That just makes me sad.
Yeah.
I don't have anything to say other than, like, that just makes me sad. Although, like, I do appreciate the positive side of things that you were saying. Like, otherwise they would have just been shut down by Square Enix. The unfortunate thing is, like, they, like you said, they're comparing everything to, like, Final Fantasy, which is, like, one of the biggest juggernauts in all of gaming, which is, you know, it's not fair. So hopefully now that these studios are, you know, a part of the Embracer group, they'll be able to, I don't know, like, make those games. I don't actually know, like, if it's going to be more restrictive or less restrictive. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Today is May 4th, and there's almost nothing cooler than Star Wars. So in our main topic, we're celebrating May the 4th be with you. And yes, we know it's coming on the 9th, but like we said, we are recording this on the 4th. So technically, it's timely.
That's right.
Yes. So we've put together individual lists of our 5 favorite Star Wars games ever. Unlike previous list topics we've done before, this one is just going to be laid back. It is in no particular order, and we're just going to talk about our favorite games. With that in mind, Riley, how about you go ahead, kick us off with your first Star Wars game on your list?
Yeah, so I think what I'm going to do, since I'm looking at your list here, you've only got 3, so I'm just going to name my number 5 and number 4 real quick, and then we can go from there maybe. Back and forth. So my number 5 is just Lego Star Wars in general. I'm not talking about the newer game, the Skywalker Saga, because I haven't played it yet. And honestly, I don't know if I'm going to go back to it because I've played, like, I'm kind of over the Lego games. Like, I feel like I've grown out of them, which is okay. They are more, I would consider them more geared towards children, although obviously, like, adult players get a lot of enjoyment out of them. I'm just not one of them that does anymore. But I put it on the list because I played those games a lot as a kid, especially the prequel ones. And it just connected me more to Star Wars than just watching the movie. You know, it was just another avenue in to Star Wars. Even though, like, I watched all the movies, I enjoyed them, you know, got in that way, but it's just like the more time you spend with the franchise and the more ways you have in, the more it's gonna get its hooks in you. So yeah, as a kid I played those a lot. Number 4, I just wanted to shout out Super Star Wars on the Super Nintendo. That game is hard as hell, but it's really, really cool. I don't have much more to say about it than that, just because like, yeah, I don't know. It's just like one of the best old school, like, Star Wars games. So that is my number 5 and my number 4. Michael, do you want to go with one of yours? And then we can trade off?
Sure thing. So I've actually, the only reason I have 3 down is because I'm going to be honest with you. Despite the point there are a lot of Star Wars games out there, very few of them actually stuck with me. Like, I know it may sound like a taboo, but I don't really like a whole lot of Star Wars games. I don't know why, but I just, very few of them caught my attention to the point to where I really liked them and I'd really recommend them to my friends. And one of those is Rogue Squadron 2. I think it's called Rogue Leader. Yeah, Rogue Squadron 2 Rogue Leader for the GameCube. And I actually got this confused with one of the games on your list because it's from two different generations. But Rogue Squadron 2 is the one I remember and the one that stuck with me because I just thought it was so great. Flying around and fighters and taking down turrets and fighting AT-ATs. It was just, it's so awesome, especially with the power of the GameCube. Like, it was one of the better looking GameCube games, and it's one of the games that sold me on the GameCube when I was a kid, because like, oh my gosh, this looks so awesome. It's like the movies. Oh, this is so cool. And it's very similar to what you had on yours, which was...
Yeah, mine's the first Rogue Squadron. So I'd say it's more common to say Rogue Squadron 2 is the better game, but I've never played that game. So actually, when I got my N64, my recent N64 a few years ago, one of the first games that I picked up from like a local game store was Rogue Squadron, because I heard it was really, really good, and it is. It's just a fun, like you were saying, like a fun kind of arcade-y shooter where you're, you know, you get to play as a member of, well, Rogue Squadron. You get to fly around in an X-Wing. I think in one of the missions, I think it's like the first mission, you, you're like protecting Luke. And it, you know, it's fun to just fly around and shoot things. And, yeah, I don't know. I just, that is one of the Star Wars games that I played that has really stood out.
All right. Well, before we move to my next one, before we recorded, you were like, oh, yeah, I like Rogue Squadron. It's like, yeah, me too. We're doing this. You're like, I don't think we're thinking of the same one.
Yeah.
And I had to figure, it's like, wait, the one I like is Rogue Squadron 2? I thought it was just the first one.
Well, I think it's called Rogue Squadron Rogue Leader. So if you didn't know about the one that was on the N64, you know, it's not like it's called Rogue Squadron 2 on the box, I don't think.
I think my thing is when I was younger, I just remember Rogue Squadron Rogue Leader. And
yeah.
How many Rogue Squadrons have there been? There's been a...
I think that's it. They did...
Squadron.
Yeah, they did Squadron, which I don't think is technically a Rogue Squadron game, but it's, you know, supposed to be from that pedigree, so maybe you can put it in there if you want.
No. And
No. I've heard that game's pretty bad, actually.
No, don't. Well, I'm actually thinking about playing it. I'm going to give it a shot one day in VR. You know, I just think it's one of those games that benefits from the VR headset, because I think you can also play without it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, I have it downloaded. I have it on my PS4, but on my PS5. But the thing is, like, I've never played it because I don't have PSVR, and, you know, that's kind of the optimal way to play it. So I don't want to play it.
Yeah. If I can't have the best, I don't want to play it.
Kind of.
That's nothing wrong with that. Oh, man. Speaking of the best, one of my picks is Republic Commando. Riley, have you ever played Republic Commando?
No, I've never even heard of this game. Please tell me what it is.
Man, Riley, you are missing out. Republic Commando. And also I'm actually not too surprised, because unfortunately, Republic Commando was one of those games that kind of flew under the radar. And I can honestly say that it's one of those gems that is easily overlooked. It came out back on, I want to say, the original Xbox.
Yeah. I'm actually looking at it, and I remember seeing the box as a lot. I remember seeing the box a lot as a kid when I would go in and rent games, but I never played it.
Yeah, it was the game that, like, really showed a new light of stormtroopers. The clone troopers, in my eyes. So it's a tactical first-person shooter, which means that you get more. That it's not just Call of Duty. You know, you
SOCOM actually, vibes.
Oh yeah, yeah. You can actually give out commands to your AI companions, and they're more hit than miss. I will give it that. Like the AI companion, they do their job. You can set up breaches. You can tell them to get on turrets. Like you actually give out commands that actually helps affects the battle, rather than just being like a one man army. You actually feel like you're a commander. You actually feel like you're in the lead of like this elite badass group of clone troopers. And wait, wow. Yeah, I think they were clone troopers. Because the game starts you off like legitimately being born inside of a tank. So like it was really cool.
that's actually like pretty cool. Like it seems like something that I might want to go and check out retroactively.
Oh yes, absolutely. I actually still have my copy of Republic Commando. Like
hell yeah!
Honestly talking about it, I kind of want to pop it back in and try and play it again. But Republic Commando, if you are a retro collector, this has to be in your collection. It's definitely a classic. It's a hidden gem of yesteryear. And it is definitely, even to the, I remember playing it again about 2 years ago and feel that the control still kind of held up, oddly enough.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like even graphically, it has like, it feels like, see if this makes sense. Okay, so it's on the original Xbox, but it feels like something that could have been played on the 360, like the early years of the 360, like a launch title.
Yeah,
like
that makes sense.
Yeah, it reminds me of Black, the EA game. To where?
Yes. Oh my God. Yes, that was such a powerhouse back in the day.
Man, it was. It was so impressive, and it was like, good God, like the Xbox and the PlayStation 2 can do that. It's like, yeah, it can. Yeah. And unfortunately, it was one of those games that came out like late in the gen, and like the next generation was on its way. It was already here, one of the two. But Republic Commando feels like it could have been a next gen PS3 360 game, and it still feels good to this day. It still feels playable. It still feels exciting. And man, to be honest, Riley, I wish I could let you borrow my copy just so you can play it. But if you can find it,
is it on Steam?
Yes.
Okay, I'll pick it up that way probably.
Yes. I never played it on PC, mind you, so I don't know how that works out. I mean, I'm sure it works out better because, you know, mouse PC is going to feel the same.
Sure.
But yeah, if you can, man, pick it up. Seriously, it is such a cool game. Actually, hold on. Let me see if of course it's backwards compat on Xbox.
Sure.
Oh, it shows that it's on Switch now too.
What?
Yeah.
I'm going to do it that way then. Seriously.
It's, as of this recording, the digital version of Star Wars Republic Commando on Switch is only $7.50.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, if you can get it, man, people, I'm telling you, you won't regret it. Republic Commando is just one of those sleeper hits. It's a hidden gem of yesteryear. I've taken up too much of our time already talking about this game. And yeah, I'm telling you, Riley, it is one of those games that I really wish more people knew about, because then we probably could have gotten a second one or at least gotten like a remaster. But I am glad to see that it has been re-released on Switch. So I recommend
it. Very cool. Yeah. So I'll go with my second one. This is probably the Star Wars game. I mean, not probably. This is the Star Wars game that I definitely played the most as a kid. Star Wars Battlefront 2. I'm not talking about the one that came out in 2017. That game sucks. I'm talking about the one that came out in 2005. Just everything about that game was a lot of fun. If I'm remembering correctly, like, you could set up your own custom matches, and you could have, like, different factions fighting against different factions, and I don't, like, I just remember just messing around with that game. Like, I never even played the story. That, like, I never got far in it. I just, like, messed around with it and set up funky scenarios. And, you know, the big thing, like, was, like, oh, I get to play as, like, I get to play as Luke, and I get to play as whatever, like, Chewie and stuff. And I remember, like, the local co-op in that game was awesome. Like, as a kid, like, just having friends over and just playing Battlefront 2, that was definitely, like, a big experience of my childhood. So, I don't have much more to say about it than that, except, like, I definitely think it's, and it's regarded as one of the best Star Wars games ever. And, you know, maybe people in our audience who might be a bit younger, they might not know that the Battlefront series used to be good. Which, like, I'm throwing a lot of shade here. I actually liked the first, like, the first remake Battlefront. Like, even though it wasn't perfect, and there's definitely some problems with it, at least it didn't do the thing of, like, Battlefront 2, where it was just, like, microtransactions. And although I could be misremembering correctly, but I might be misremembering it, but I feel like the first Battlefront game didn't have nearly as much of a problem with microtransactions and loot boxes and things that Battlefront 2 did, the 2017 one. It's really confusing, but yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
So I know what you're talking about when it came to the microtransactions. Yeah, the second one definitely tried to take it too far with the way they were trying to do loot boxes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's when everybody really made the big stink about the microtransactions. Because the first one, I think the biggest thing with the first one was, like, their, what was it? The season pass that they did.
Yeah.
But at that point, people were like, it's EA. We're used to them doing season passes. But the second one, they were like, yeah, no season pass. Everything's going to be free. We're like, oh, that's cool. Hold up a minute. What are you doing?
Yeah, I think the problem with the first game was the season pass, but also just because there wasn't enough content in it to begin with.
Yeah.
Right? And I totally get that. But I think the maps that they did have were fun. So, yeah, that's kind of why I'm maybe forgiving a little bit more than the second game. I never even picked up the second game because I was like, well, I don't want to be in this environment.
I need a safe place away from EA's violence. I'm going to go back to the original war, the original Battlefield.
That's right. I actually haven't played Battlefront probably since I was like 12 years old. So maybe, did I say Battlefield?
No, I said Battlefield.
Yeah. I haven't played Battlefront 2 since I was a kid. So maybe I should go back to that and Rogue Squadron.
Actually, if I remember correctly, I think online somebody has.
Yeah, I've heard this.
They brought back the online aspect of Battlefront 2. Or was it just a local?
I think you can play, at least on PC, right? The online stuff.
Which I think is pretty awesome. Like, I don't know. I think if people want to make servers to bring back the multiplayer of old games that got shut down, I think they should be able to do that. Because
I definitely agree.
Because Battleborn, there were times where I wanted to replay Battleborn because it was actually fun. But I couldn't because Gearbox shut down the multiplayer prematurely. They did it real early in the game's life. And that was the biggest part of the game was online play. So, yeah, the game became pretty much unplayable.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
It really is. But what's real unfortunate is that I don't see the best Star Wars games on your list, Riley.
It's only because I've never played it, okay?
Which is an even bigger shame. The number one game that I would put on my list, I know there's no particular order, but for me personally, this is probably the biggest Star Wars games for me. Knights of the Old Republic. Easily one of the best Star Wars games I've ever played. And I haven't played all of them, I will admit, but Knights of the Old Republic is something magical about that game. Everything works from the great story to the great dialogue to the great characters. To the so-so gameplay, you know, at that point we were kind of used to that whole turn-based ordeal. But it was great to play it on console. I give it that, because that's where I played it. I just really love that game and the universe that it helped set up. and allowing me to be whatever Jedi I wanted to be, whether it was good or bad. And I was like, oh yeah, this is awesome. And a point that my crew can change with me, I always felt was great. I always hated when games had like characters like, you can't do that, that's mean. Well, I'm the boss, so I don't really care.
If I want to be, do what I want.
Yeah, I do what I want. If I want to be mean, I'm going to be mean. If I want to kick that baby, I'm going to kick that baby. But in Knights of the Old Republic, eventually you can get most of your team to kind of go to a dark side, and to where they're, at first you get a character that's like, hey, we should do good things. But later on they're like, yeah, you know what? Kick that baby. I don't care. It's not my baby. And even if it was, I'll probably still let you kick him. And that sounds dark. Man, we got real dark. I got real dark with Knights of the Republic. But that's why I love it, because you can go there. You can do that. Well, you can't kick a baby. But you can go to the dark side, you know, and depending on what side you choose your powers and how you deploy them. And like the team management aspect of it was just so fun to deal with, to where I wanted everybody in my crew to be out and about doing something. Like, I wanted everybody to fight by my side. I wanted everybody to talk to me. I wanted to know more about their backstory and what they're doing and what they want out of all of this. And it's just, man, that's what happens. We have just like good writing in general. You want to talk to every NPC and every character on your crew. And Knights of the Old Republic did that for me. It put me in a spot to where I wanted to play this game forever. I was so sad that the game ended, that it's one of the few games, and I've talked about this on the podcast a few times, there are very few games that I go back and replay. But Knights of the Old Republic is just one of those games that I've gone back multiple times and replayed. Even though I knew the story, even though I knew the characters, it was just so fun to play and go through. Riley.
God, it's currently $3.49 on Steam. There's no reason for me not to play it.
Yes, Riley, I know, and I will tell you now, Riley, it is time consuming. I will say that the game does take time, because your choices that you can make and the people that you meet, and there's a lot of backtracking in this game, a lot of it. So
that's fine.
So I will warn you that it will take some time, and you know, you and I, we both said before that we're usually busy, and it's becoming harder for us to give like a single game all of our time.
Yeah, I've just given up on completing games, I think. Like, just in general, the idea of completing games, I'm just like, you know, if it happens, cool, but I'm not going to try for it.
Yeah, I think you get your money's worth if you have fun with the game. Like,
totally.
Like, as long as you enjoy it, once you get to the point to where you're like, yeah, I want to move on, you got your money's worth. Like, you're not obligated to finish the game. But yeah, I will let you know, Riley, if you like good story, Knights of the Old Republic is gonna hold your time. And I do think it's a game you're going to go back and forth with, just so you can finish the game and all the characters you do get to meet.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Very cool.
So how about you, all Riley? Right, well, how do you finish off your list?
My number one, and now, let me caveat this by saying that I also, like, even though I'm a huge Star Wars fan, I also haven't played many Star Wars games. And I think that's just because, like, I grew up after, like, a lot of the, like, really, really, like, super great ones were coming out. Like, I'm talking about, like, X-Wing and TIE Fighter and those kind of games, which are considered masterpieces. My number one game, even though it's in no particular order, is Jedi Fallen Order. And, you know, I think this game kind of gets the short end of criticism. I think it gets more criticism than it deserves, really. A lot of people seem to really not quite like this game, or seem to have something against this game, and I can't really figure out why. To me, it's one of my favorite Star Wars stories, actually. Just the setting and, well, obviously the setting is Star Wars, but specifically after episode 3, in between episode 3 and episode 4, and I just thought the story was so engaging, where it's about trying to track down this this list of Jedi's, I believe it's Jedi children, right, that the Empire, the newly formed Empire, is trying to get a hold of so that they can kill them, right? And I just think it added a lot of interesting things, which I think come from other parts of the Star Wars universe that I've never been privy to, really. Like the Inquisitors, or I think they're called the Inquisitors. I think those come from Star Wars Rebels, maybe. But they added it into this game, and that was the first time like I experienced something like that. And it's also the first Souls-like game that I ever played. I always said, like, I'm not into this game. Like, I'm not into the Soulsborne games. And I actually started Bloodborne, like, a few years ago and was like, this isn't for me. Like, I didn't even get out of the first room. And then I played all through Jedi Fallen Order. Really loved it. And I was like, you know what? I think I can do, like, the From games. So I went back to Bloodborne. And as listeners may know, that's become my favorite game of all time. So I think I have a special appreciation for this game, not just in terms of its story, but what it did for my taste in video games. Also, like, I just wanted to expand on the story bit a bit more. The part where you are, I think it's like, I haven't played it in a while, but I think it's like your lightsaber breaks, or you're just getting your first lightsaber. Like, Cal Kestis is just getting his first lightsaber, and he has to go and, like, track down the Kyber crystal and, like, all this other stuff. And it's like, wow, this is stuff that, like, you don't see very often. Like, you hear about, like, yeah, you know, lightsabers are powered by Kyber crystals. Cool, but you don't really ever get the chance to see it. And there's a whole level in this game that's just like, you're going to, I forget what planet it is. I don't think it's Hoth, but it's another ice planet. And you're going there and you are hunting down for your Kyber crystal. And it's like, God, that's so freaking cool. So yeah, I don't know. I just like, I'm kind of glowing about this game, but I think it deserves it. And I'm really looking forward to the next one in the series.
See, I really have to finish Fallen Order. Because I also thought it was kind of cool, but I stopped playing because, man, those 30 frames per second were ruining things for me. And I told myself I'd wait until I got a Series X to play it, so I could play it at a, with the FPS boost. And, sure. And I haven't gotten around to it yet, but to be honest, right, you make me want to go back and play it now, like to try it out.
It just left such a good impression on me in terms of, like, expanding on the Star Wars lore.
Right.
There's also things in this game where it's like, it's sort of like that thing that a lot of Star Wars fans, including myself, ask for, which is like, give us Force users that aren't Jedi or Sith and maybe are somewhat in between. And it does that. I think they're like original Sith, if I'm correct in remembering, but you know, the original Sith aren't like evil, they're just chaotic, right? Whereas like the Empire is definitely, you know, quote unquote evil. So yeah, I don't know, like, very cool stuff with that game.
Okay, you're talking about the crystal. Tell me, right, have you ever played Star Wars Force Unleashed?
You know, I played it, but never really got, like, I never really got far enough into it to like have an opinion about it.
Right. Well, I remember being excited for that game, and the reason it's not on my list is because I remember being somewhat disappointed by it, but also liking it at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, it was really weird, because it was interesting, because you got to be the student of Darth Vader. It's just like, oh, this is gonna be so cool. Yeah. And it didn't really do anything with it, except have you go around being an assassin for Darth Vader, which I was like, okay, that makes sense, but we don't really get a whole lot of Darth Vader in there for him to be our mentor.
The thing that always got me with that game when I was a kid, which I think I can get over now, but it was like, well, if this guy was the apprentice to Darth Vader, how come I've never heard of him before? Yeah. Like, I couldn't get over that hump, I think, when I was a kid. Like, it was very, like, incongruous in my little mind.
And see, for me, it was the opposite. I was like, oh, wow, Darth Vader apprentice. Oh, this is going to be so awesome. Like, maybe he's hidden from the Rebels or something happened to him. Like, I didn't really care about that. I was like, yeah, Darth Vader. And then we don't get a whole lot of Darth Vader. And I was like, oh, you get to play him in the beginning. Yeah. And which I thought was really cool. And just me, instead of me want a Darth Vader game, it's like, can I just play as Darth Vader? Like, that's awesome. Speaking of things that we play, Riley, what did you play last weekend?
Yeah, so, like I said in the beginning, I've been bouncing between everything. I started a new Animal Crossing island because, unfortunately, you can't change your name in Animal Crossing, so that forced me to create a whole new island. I deleted my old island. However, it's gotten me back into playing the game again because definitely the beginning hours, like the beginning, I don't know, 10 hours of that game are definitely, in my opinion, the best because that's when you're building up your island. And then the rest of the game is like kind of maintaining the island, and it's still fun. I mean, I looked at my time played on that game on my Switch, and it's like 140 hours. It's like by far the longest I put into any game ever. So, you know, I obviously played it past the beginning part on my original island, but yeah, I started a new Animal Crossing island, been doing that. I've been playing a little bit more of Elden Ring. Don't really have much to report about my progress there. I beat Godric. That's about like how far I am into that game, and I go way back and forth on that game. Like, when I'm in the mood to play it, it's my favorite thing ever, but I'm hardly ever in the mood to play it. Which is like such a big surprise, right? Because I love Bloodborne. Thought Demon's Souls was like pretty amazing as well, but it's just like Elden Ring, like, I don't know, like something about the world and the story, it's not my favorite, I'd say. I would say with Bloodborne and Demon's Souls, those were both more, in my mind, focused. Like the theming hit me better than the theming of Elden Ring. Even though they both have like, Elden Ring has horror elements and it has like all these things. It's like, the lands between, I think, are not my favorite setting for a From Software game. But the main thing that I want to talk about that I've been playing is Dune Spice Wars. This is a game that we saw teased at last year's Game Awards. And it was only like, they didn't really show anything, right? It was just like a, this game exists. It wasn't even a cinematic trailer from what I remember. It was just a screen of the title. And I was like, yeah, that's awesome. I'm really into Dune. So I've been waiting for that. I've actually been part of the, their Discord server for a while, which you can join via, well, if you buy the game, you can join. And also, I think if you go to their Steam page, you can join for free. It's in early access right now, so it's a, you know, very early build of the game. They released it, I believe, April 26th. And I picked it up a couple of days after that. I'm just really, really having a lot of fun with the game. It's a 4X game. So if you know what that is, if you don't know what that is, it's basically sort of an RTS, but more focused on, it's less focused on warfare and more focused on keeping your realm, getting things going in your realm and figuring out a way to expand, but not expand too quickly, and to defend what you have while also trying to expand, and your enemies are trying to do the same thing. There's no multiplayer right yet, which is maybe the biggest not disappointment, but it's just like one of those things where it's like, I know it's going to get added later. But right now this is just like a very, very early build of the game, and what they have, I'm really enjoying. You know, a little while ago, I stayed up to like 4 a.m. playing this game. And like, I haven't done that since I was in high school. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like, it's one of those games where it's like, you know, it's the thing of, I forget what series, Civilization, right? Where it's like just one more turn. Like, that's how I feel. Even though it's not divide, like the structure is not turn-based, it's like, okay, let me do this thing, and then that's going to get my money up. And then if I wait just a little bit, you know, I can get this other thing. And it's like, you know, the same thing with developments, and there's espionage in the game, there's political stuff in the game. It's like really, really cool. So if you're into like 4X kind of games, definitely like check it out. It's $30 right now, early access. The game is not, well, apparently there's been some bugs that people have run into, but I haven't really run into, or I don't think I'm smart enough to notice the bugs. There was a bug where I guess like you could infinitely duplicate armies, but it's like I wasn't smart enough to figure out how to do that, so wow. I didn't notice it. It's not immediately noticeably buggy from my experience, but that's what I've been playing last weekend. That's probably what I'm going to be playing this weekend as well. What about you?
Ooh, as for me, I've been going through a few games, mostly demos, getting ready for LudoNeraCon, which by the time this episode goes out, it will be the last day. But yeah, within the next podcast, I'll talk about LudoNeraCon and some things I'm going to report on. So I've been doing a few demos of those. I'm still playing Mad Max because I'm still enjoying that game. Oh my goodness, it's still fun. And it's definitely one of those games that benefit from the Series X's FPS boost. And really, that's about it. I've been looking up to do a few games on Game Pass. I went back to playing Overwatch after all this time.
Wow.
Just to see if I actually enjoy it again. And yeah, I'm still not into it anymore. Which is very unfortunate. Because I'm not excited for Overwatch 2. But then again, I wasn't excited for Overwatch 1 when it first came out and the beta happened. I was like, I don't really care about the beta. And then the game came out and I had a bunch of friends who got it and they were like, hey, man, this is really good. You can play with us. And I ended up getting it just to play with friends and it was enjoyable. And I'm kind of hoping the same thing happens with 2, to be honest. I hope it's fun. But, you know, I'm holding off on that. So I've been playing a little bit of Overwatch again. But I've also been playing... Oh, what else have I been playing other than Mad Max? I've actually been, like I said, I've been going through games on Game Pass because I'm addicted to Xbox Quick Resume now. And being able to switch through 3 or 4 different games without having to reload them, like to reboot them, has been a real joy of mine. And I never really noticed how much I'd want that feature until now. But that and Weird West. Have you heard of Weird West?
Ah, yes. I've been playing Weird West a little bit.
I think you brought it up to me.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, you're the one who brought it up to me. So, Riley, I took your advice and I tried out Weird West and I'm kind of enjoying it. It's pretty cool.
Have you gotten to the second character yet?
No, I'm still on the first because I am taking my sweet time. I'm doing so many side missions and bounties.
Sure. Yeah.
But the werewolves. I don't like werewolves, Riley. I don't like going up against werewolves, and they come out of nowhere.
That's fair. There's one bounty hunter mission that I remember where it was specifically werewolves.
Oh,
I've kind of fallen off of Weird West a little bit. But who knows? I might go back to it sometime.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about Weird West. It's like it's not like addictive to the point where I want to keep playing, but it seems like a thing that I played for a few minutes and then put down and forget about and go back and play it again. It's real strange.
I definitely agree with you there. It's like, well, the funny thing is like my experience has been when I boot it up, it's like, then I get addicted to it. Once I'm playing it, it's like, okay, I'm in this.
Yeah.
But it's like thinking about booting it up. It's like,
do I really want to?
Yeah.
Oh man. But Riley, what are you playing this weekend?
Yeah. So I'm just, you know, playing, probably going to be playing Dune Spice Wars a lot more. Also like, I'm definitely going to buy KOTOR and probably play some of that.
Yes.
Yeah, those are like the main things I've been... Oh, I also wanted to shout out a very specific game that I have been playing again. Oh boy, this is the most nostalgic I'll ever get on this show.
Ooh.
For some reason, I've been wanting, like... I watched a video about this game, and it's like a very personal experience for me because this game I played, I don't know, like all throughout my childhood, starting like when I was 5 years old. And it's one of the games that I feel like is mine and not many people know about it. Or if they know about it, they don't talk about it. It's definitely like a for kids game, right? It's Pajama Sam and No Need to Hide When It's Dark Outside. So what this is, what this thing is, it's a point and click adventure game. Have you ever heard of the company Humongous Entertainment?
I want to say yes, Michael. But I'm not sure.
Okay. So Humongous Entertainment, I just found this out, was created by Ron Gilbert. And he was one of the people involved with making the company happen. Ron Gilbert, if you don't know who that is, he is a legend in the point and click adventure game community. He came out, he created Monkey Island, he then went on to, I believe he also worked on Day of the Tentacle and Maniac Mansion, and he went on to create Humongous Entertainment, which was, let's make point-and-click adventure games, but let's do educational games. Like, let's make point-and-click educational games for children. And the thing about Pajama Sam, at least this game, and another game they did, Spy Fox, they are educational, but...
Oh, whoa, Spy Fox.
Yeah. Oh, you know... Do you know Spy Fox?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's the same company.
Oh, wait,
so
the little kid with the blanket cape and the pajamas...
No, Spy Fox.
No, not Spy Fox. I'm talking about the game that you're talking about.
Yes, that's right. Okay. So,
oh wow, jeez, right? That's going way back.
What a nostalgic thing, right? And I watched a video about it. I watched like a retrospective on it, and I just was hit. I was hit with this wave of nostalgia, and I was realizing that every single screen in this game is permanently burned into. Like, it's like it exists in every cell in my body. That's how deep it goes.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, like, I bought that off of Steam, and I've been playing it. And I don't know, like, just pure, unadulterated nostalgia.
Yeah,
that's what
I
I've been
bet.
Playing.
Jeez.
I
never thought about going that far back into my childhood.
Yeah, I mean, that's a deep, deep, deep cut. And the thing is, like, when I was a kid, I could never beat the game because I was a dumb kid. And now I watched, I watched a retrospective, and then I watched, like, a Let's Play of it. And it's only, like, an hour long. But as a dumb kid, I think, like, not being able to get through it and just playing it over and over and over again developed that sense, like, that's what burned it into me. So, yeah, that's the most nostalgic you'll ever hear me on this show.
Wow. Oh my goodness. Well, that's going way back. That's like
way, way back. Whew. But the first Pajama Sam game, which is the game that I played as a kid, was released in 1996, the same year I was born.
Wow.
I have no idea how that game got into my grandma's house. I don't know where it came from, but it was just there. And I just played the shit out of it.
Wow, man, that is man. When you brought up Spy Fox, I was like, wow, yeah. For some reason, I remember those two games together. I'm just like,
I played Spy Fox a lot as a kid as well. That was the first game, the dry cereal one. I think that was the first game. But I remember playing that one a lot, but not liking it quite as much as Pajama Sam.
Goodness gracious! Wow, it's gonna be hard for me to top that. But for me, I'm playing. You know, a bunch of demos for getting ready for Little Narracon. I'll talk about that next week. And wow, Riley, jeez. You know,
it has even gone so far that I'm developing a personal top 10 list of my favorite games of all time, and I put that game on there.
Whoa!
Because it's intrinsically like part of who I am, which is like a crazy thing to say, but that's how I feel about it.
Wow, has that tight grip on your childhood, huh?
Oh yeah, like more than any other video game ever. That is the one.
Oh my goodness! Wow. Well, if you want to talk to Riley about some of your childhood games and what has a tight grip on you, you can tell her or me or any of the team on our Discord. which is the best way to get in touch with us, at least for now. Also, please consider dropping us a rating. It helps us out tremendously. And finally, check out thenerdstash.com. At the Nerd Stash, you can find all sorts of news in the world of gaming, movies, television, and more. We also have reviews, lists, entertaining opinion pieces, more like Riley herself with all her crazy nostalgia. To the point, guys, and pretty much anything you would want from a gaming entertainment site. Seriously, go on our Discord. Let Riley know about some of your favorite old school games, because I was born in 88. So it makes sense why I know about Pajama Sam and Spy Fox. So Riley, the point that you know about it, I don't know if it shows just how long those games can last. I'm pretty sure.
Well, you see, Michael,
I'm pretty sure you can
my
still
family
find
was
those.
Poor.
Oh,
my family was poor. So I actually grew up like with a pretty excellent gaming like childhood, because I got to have my uncle seemingly had every like Nintendo thing. Like I even had a Virtual Boy growing up because it was a hand-me-down from my uncle.
What? I never had a Virtual Boy. I never had a gaming PC until like I was in my 20s. Thanks, Riley.
I thought it sucked when I was a kid. I was like, this sucks. I don't want to play this. I didn't. And then, you know, 20 years later or whatever, it's like one of the most sought after things.
Yeah, another nostalgia trip.
Yeah, but that's, anyway, sorry to derail you.
No, this is the most I've seen you get excited for. Like, I've seen you get excited for some games, Riley, but like, Pajama Sam, that's what got you, like, you sound like me when I talk about games that I enjoy. You're just like, oh man, let me tell you about this old 1996 game.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, it's just because of the experience. I don't think if you play it today, like, I think you could get some enjoyment out of it because the art style is really good. And like, but like, I think it holds up? If you're not me, no, but it will always hold up for me.
Hey, that's fair. Like, there's just some games, like, no matter how old they are, there's just this memory that just keeps us around. And for me, it is some of the old stuff. Like, some people, you know, they still love the original Sonic or the original Mario. Like, no matter how much things age, for some people, things age better than others. I talked about some of the games that I enjoyed back on the original Xbox that honestly does not hold up too well today.
Yeah.
It does not. Even I was playing like, who thought of these controls? Was this really like a thing that we all accepted back then? That's really weird. So yeah, things change. Some things, they just age better than others.
Definitely.
Oh man, but thank you, Riley, for that nostalgia trip for myself too. Oh my goodness. And thanks to everyone for listening in, whether this is your first time or your 600th time. We're glad that you're here, and spread the word to your friends. Let them know that we're a bunch of dorks who apparently enjoy Spy Fox and Pajama Sam, and you never know what we're going to talk about next. So thank you all for joining us this week, next week, or last week, and we hope you come back, and we hope you stay. We'll be back next week to talk about some more gaming news, and of course, my coverage of Ludonarricon.